That's what it is. All right, welcome to the Most High Show. My name is Christian. Today we're going to be hearing Adam's story, story of recovery, overcoming addiction, and overcoming and discovering his identity in God, in Christ, and in life. So stay tuned. This is the Most High Show. Welcome to the Most High Show, a show about recovery, spirituality, and all that. Produced, posted, and hosted by people in recovery who have strength and hope and want to share it with you. If you or someone you love is suffering, we want you to know you are not alone. This is the Most High Show. So I used a bad word.
What word did you use?
Christ. That's a trigger word for a lot of people. So if you're...
It's divisive.
And so if you've heard that and now you're going to be weird, don't be. Just relax. Listen to this story, you know, and see what you can learn from it, right?
Sure.
Yeah. So, Adam, I've known you a couple years, right?
Yep. Yeah.
And we're getting to know each other a little bit more, and so I'm really appreciative of you taking your time to share your story. And you shared your story a couple weeks ago at Vision Warriors, and it was pretty powerful. I got to sit there and listen to it.
Nice.
And... Your leadership there, and in your new job, you know, you have a natural ability, and I think you found a purpose. And so, I'm excited to be able to share that journey with other people, so they can understand, you know, that if they're going through something right now, where you might be early in sobriety, and you might be thinking, "This is crazy, right? Why am I doing this? I was happier getting high." Which early on you might feel that way.
Yeah, I did, for sure. That
I think your story is an example of living a full life in recovery and sobriety and what that brings. And in comparison now, that, you know, it's far outweighs any life getting high. So, so thanks for being here and your willingness to share that.
Yeah, my pleasure, man.
Yeah. So, Adam, tell me what it is that you do. Now, what's life like now for you, regular day in the life?
Day in the life now. Let's see. Every relationship I have is with somebody in recovery. Almost 100%. I mean, aside from the guys in my small group at church, I would say 100% are people that are either healthy or working to become healthy or healthier.
Mm-hmm.
And that was not the case in the past.
Yeah.
I mean, every number in my phone in the past was, you know, not somebody doing well.
Right.
Or with aims of doing well.
Mm-hmm. So what's that like to be to have those kind of relationships in your life now? What's that look like?
That's been a game changer for me, really. I had a lot of people that, in the past, that just were yes men and would co-sign to my crap because they wanted something. It was benefiting them somehow.
Right.
And now I have a lot of great relationships, but they're challenging because they're not yes men. They love me enough to have uncomfortable conversations with me when they see something in me that is not healthy for me, that I'm missing. And that's there's so much value in that. There's this analogy of a goldfish in a bowl.
Okay.
Right. And the goldfish is swimming around in this bowl in this water, and he can see outside of this goldfish bowl, see all of these people that are watching him. Those represent the people in your life.
Right.
Right. And we're the goldfish. The only thing the goldfish can't see is the water it's swimming in. And that's our crap that we're blind to. You know, it's our blind spot.
Right, right.
And so having people that care about you and love you can point out this water in a constructive way.
Yeah.
That we're blind to. And I never really had that.
I mean,
I kept people at a distance.
Right.
Because they would have threatened my ability to use or to continue living how I was living. So they weren't, I didn't let anybody close enough to be able to see the water. I tried to hide that water that I was aware of.
Mm-hmm.
And, just kept people at a distance. Just
kind of living, I would equate that to living in your not being conscious of your decisions and choices, that like when you don't see who you really are and what you really are and what your actions are and the ripple effect of your actions, right? And you're just kind of going off of this internal, visceral instinct, right? Like a freaking animal.
Survival mode.
Yeah. And that's the way a lot of us, look, you ain't got to be a drug addict to live in that kind of way. I mean, there are plenty of people living today who by the standards of our culture would say, hey, you're living the life. You're doing everything's great. You got everything you need. And, but without
hashtag like Facebook,
right? Yeah. Any social media is, you know, magnifying that. And so you forget that you are like, it is that kind of sense of like knowing who you are. Somebody told me once about, that being in Christ, right? Being with Jesus is that Jesus will help you to be more at peace and know who you are, right? Yeah.
And be so, okay with that.
And be okay with it. Yeah. That you know the popular opinion is that that Christianity is a shame or guilt based religion, and I think that our experience, my experience for sure, is that the more I know Jesus, the more I realize that, oh, he actually likes me for who I am, how I am, exactly how I am. You know, I don't have to put up any pretenses to pretend that I'm something that I'm not.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I was talking with a buddy the other day, and we were talking kind of a, you know, of about who God sees us as, right? And it's not, his love isn't something we have to earn. But in the past, we tried to.
Yeah. Right?
And we were human doings instead of human beings.
Right. That's a good one.
And that really resonated with me. And, you know, there's a lot of people that try to perform their way into being loved by God and by people. And it's, you know, it's not a necessary thing. And it's not really ever completely fruitful.
Yeah.
But in doing so, you know.
So you're... I don't want to impede if you don't how much personal information you want to share, but you're saying you live your life and you're surrounded by recovery. Mm-hmm. Why is that? Can you want to get into details so people get why you're surrounded in recovery?
Man, my relationship, and you know, like living like how I am today would have been such a turnoff to me in the past. Like when I tried to get sober in the past and I, you know, would be at a rehab and people would come in and speak and they would share pretty much all the things I'm doing now. And it just sounded horrible, right? It sounded miserable.
Right.
And I didn't, you know, it didn't seem like any fun.
Right.
And I honestly, I think that was the subconscious belief I had was, man, if I'm sober, my life's going to suck. I'm not going to have any fun.
Right.
And it's just going to be dull and bland and boring.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm really glad I'm wrong about that.
Yeah.
Because I have a lot of other real dudes, you know, that I'm friends with that are in recovery. And and we have a lot of fun. We know each other intimately, you know, like there's not secrets and people are able to be vulnerable, talk about stuff they don't want to talk about.
Right.
And that's powerful.
Yeah.
Because that gives other people permission to do the same thing.
Yeah.
That's, you know, I had people like that, examples that did that, that set that example for me, that was like, oh man, like I respect this dude. I look up to this guy and he's talking about this stuff that pretty much anybody I've ever met would not talk about. And I just saw like, I just saw such strength in that. And I want, you know, and I wanted that, like I wanted what this dude had.
Yeah.
So examples like that, that have, I don't know, made life like really fun.
Yeah. Yeah. But now life wasn't always fun.
No.
Right? So when was the first time that you can remember where you found a drug or alcohol to be a solution to a problem in your life?
You know, no one's ever asked me that question, but I have a pretty obvious answer. I mean, I was probably 13. I was in middle school.
Mm-hmm.
It was at a party. And, you know, guys are insecure. I'm sure girls are too, but insecure at that age anyways.
Mm-hmm.
But I was more so than I think most people. And so I felt loose at this party. And I didn't feel like such an outcast. I felt like I fit in.
Yeah.
More. And this party sticks out to me. It's kind of the first time of that happening.
Yeah, social acceptance, social awareness. You were like, oh, all of a sudden, all these issues that you had before in these social situations gone away, and you felt like you fit in and belonged.
My awareness of them went away for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. How much of that was belonging, like, and feeling like you belonged?
Say that again.
How much of that experience was about belonging and feeling like you belonged somewhere?
Oh, that's huge. I mean, that's something I always wanted to feel but never truly did.
Yeah.
And I think that's something about now, why I enjoy my life now so much, because I feel like I found a sweet spot of where I belong and what I'm doing and my relationships.
Right.
Relationship with God. And what I feel like he's calling me to do.
Mm-hmm.
It's all kind of just come together into this sweet spot where I feel like I'm right where I'm supposed to be.
Yeah. That was the thing that resonated with me the most, the sense of belonging. It's something that, even still today, it's a continual realignment that has to happen for me. That when I step into places is, you know, reminding myself, okay, you belong here. Like, it doesn't matter what area I'm in, that there's this continual kind of thing. And it is what it is for me. But I think it also is why I'm here, why I'm doing this, why we got podcasts and lights and studios set up, because I know the harm of that, right? And I know that for me, my beginning of diving into drugs and alcohol was that, yeah, it gave me a sense of belonging. I was running with the crew. We were causing all kinds of mischief and sure. stuff, and that crew gave me a sense of belonging, and they accepted me as I was, and they, you know, it was dope. So yeah, that's your first time. You can remember this distinctively. You can remember this party. And so what happens from that point on?
That becomes this new key to feeling okay about myself.
Hmm.
You know, started out as parties in middle school. Then it started, you know, to become smoking weed every day or as much as I could. You know, I used to tell myself, oh, everything's better when you're stoned. And
right.
it seemed that way.
Yeah. You know? Yeah.
But yeah, the acceptance thing, that's something we all need. We all want it. We all need it.
Yeah.
We need to feel that. We're
yeah.
relational beings, and much like our need for air or water or food, we'll do whatever it takes to get it. And that's anybody.
Yeah.
We need it. We're going to do whatever it takes to get it.
Yeah.
My way of finding that was an unhealthy way.
Yeah.
But it worked.
Right.
You know, it was a facade of it working.
Yeah. Yeah.
It wasn't anything sustainable or real. It felt real.
Yeah.
Because I felt like, oh, these people like me, but it wasn't the real me.
Yeah. Well, I think, like, you're tapping on that, the acceptance, like, you know, sometimes in culture, it's like, you know, you don't want to be like, I don't need to be accepted. I'm, you know, we kind of try to circumvent that divine or innate need that we have within us to feel a sense of belonging or acceptance. And to deny that is denying your humanity and divinity in a sense, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Sure.
Absolutely. So you continue on this and, but you, I mean, tell me about it. Like, when does it start getting to a point where you go, okay, I may have an issue here. This is not just me belonging. This is not just fitting in at a party. I'm not just having fun. Something else is happening now.
There's a couple instances. I mean, one of them was, you know, robbing people at gunpoint in college for money to continue
right.
what I was doing.
That might,
and even then,
right.
I felt numb to that.
Right.
Like, I thought about it afterwards, like, man, if me and my buddy got caught, what would happen to us? And then I got high and, you know, numbed
forgot
out
about
the
that.
Feelings.
Yeah.
But I think another time later on down the road was when I was prescribed painkillers. And I think the first month that I took them all before I could get my next month's supply.
Yeah.
And I felt that just really strong sense of despair and desperation and panic. I just really felt the weight of the chaos that my life had become.
Yeah.
But it wasn't strong enough for me to stop, because it went on for years after that. And I just lived in that because it was familiar. And I was numb to how chaotic it really was. It's just crazy. Looking back, I mean, it's nuts. But in the moment, it felt like it was normal.
Yeah.
Which is scary.
Yeah, it's the insanity, right? That if you're talking 12-step language, right? It's the 12th, the step two, right? That God can restore me to sanity, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm going through the steps again right now, and that was the thing. And my sponsor's like, okay, where's the insanity? You know, like refocusing me into the insanity of it. And I'm like, oh, well, here, let me give you some. And I was thinking of a bit, which would be funny, which are like the top 10 signs that you might be a drug addict. You know, if you're robbing people at gunpoint to get money to get high, you might be a drug addict. You know?
For sure.
So, you know, making light of it now because you've lived through this. But so you have this realization. Then becomes the internal battle, right? Because a part of you wakes up and goes, wait a minute, dude, we don't do that, right? I mean, I look at you now, I know you now, and you're a gentle, kind, you think before you speak. The last person who I would think would be committing violent crimes.
I know.
Right? So, but this internal battle starts, right? This, you're the true self, who you are today, right?
Yeah.
Kind of peeks his head out and goes, hey, what's up with this? Where does that battle lead you? How long do you battle before you get help?
Before you get help.
Yeah. How long did it take?
I was going to rock until the wheels fell off.
Yeah.
You know, and I did. I finally got arrested. I had overdose on heroin, and I was, you know, I was trying to kill myself, really, was what I was trying to do, because I got to a point where I was just so broken, and I just was weary from living like that, and I couldn't see going on like that, and I definitely couldn't see it getting better, ever. I just didn't think that was in the cards at all. So I overdosed on heroin. I got, luckily somebody found me on, you know, a bathroom floor of a gas station, and they called paramedics, and they revived me and took me to jail. Well, they took me to hospital and then jail. Now I'm sitting in jail, and I've been on painkillers for years for my car accident and back surgery. And so I use that defensively. Like if my family or anybody close to me would kind of call me out, I'd be like, well, you know, I'm in pain, and this is from a doctor. Are you a doctor? No, I don't think so. So, well, you know, are you smarter than a doctor? And I use that, like, so much. And, you know, thinking about where my family was at, they probably felt like, I don't know how to handle this, because I know he's in legitimate pain.
Yeah.
But I also think that he's abusing them, so I don't know how to handle this. And I, you know, I use that to my advantage. But now all of a sudden, you know, I'm arrested and it's for heroin, and my whole family knows. My secret is out. I'm completely exposed.
Right.
And on top of being exposed, I know I'm very sharply aware of my brokenness.
Yeah.
And I think those two things combined helped me to get, you know, to be just willing enough
to get help.
To start doing something different. That and, you know, prison time hanging over my head, because they're like, well, you can go to a year program or you can go to prison for 5 to 7 years. I'm like, yeah, I think I'm going to do the rehab.
Yeah, right, right.
I think I'll give that a shot.
Was that your first attempt at, well, wait, before we go there, you made the comment a couple weeks ago that just to give an example of the depravity, right? You know, the fact that you're alone getting high in a gas station bathroom.
Yeah.
Right? The series of events that has to happen to where that's the place you're choosing to get high.
Yeah.
And potentially kill yourself.
Yeah.
Right. You know, I'm sure you've had to really reconcile and deal with that moment. And for you, as you share it, I'm sure that you can even visualize the tile and the whole.
Yeah.
Can you, you can.
Oh, that, yeah. Every time I go back to Jacksonville, where I moved to Atlanta from, I always stop by there.
You do?
Yeah.
Just to remind yourself.
Yeah. I mean, God saved me there. Man, he rescued me.
Wow.
From, like, at that.
You go in there, get a little Debbie floor. And a Pepsi, and go look in that bathroom and go.
No, I don't even do that. I just go straight in there.
Wow.
And I just kind of stand there and think about it and pray a little bit, and it's usually pretty powerful.
Yeah.
And more so each time because there's just been more joy and things that I feel like God's added to my life since each time I go back there. And it's just, it's pretty cool to see what's possible, you know, when you kind of surrender your own self and let God, you know, do his thing.
Yeah, it's like a stone of remembrance. You know, think like when the Israelites crossed the sea and then they were freed, you know, Moses was freeing the slaves, and they build up this thing, they called it the stones of remembrance, so they could remember what God did for them.
Yeah.
And so for you, that's what that.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
It took me a long time to go back to my hometown because I had a lot of fear around that, you know. But now, the last time I went to my hometown, I had that same sense of, like, you know, I felt a level of freedom there that maybe the first time I went back I didn't have, you know. I was worried.
So yeah, the first time I went there, it was kind of scary.
Yeah, I bet.
But now, like, I'll go back and, man, it puts a smile on my face.
Wow.
Which may be kind of weird, but that's what happens.
Well, that's the thing. We don't regret the past. We get to a point where we no longer regret the past, and we're able to use that, like you're using it today, to share. And I'm sure you've used it plenty of times in one-on-one conversations and in small group settings to say, you know, if you don't think the miracle can happen, you know, here's proof it can happen.
Like, I didn't either.
Right. Yeah. So you decide to take the treatment sent away instead of jail time. Very wise. is that the only time? Is that the first time did you take a couple more tries? So tell me about what it's like to come to submit yourself to go into a program.
Yeah, so I'd been to rehab a couple times in the past, and I would come out and I'd be gung-ho, like going to meetings and stuff, but I never had any peace in my life. I wanted it, but I was just going to meetings, kind of sitting in the back. As soon as it was over, I was gone. I wasn't getting into relationships with people, and, you know, I was still miserable. I was, you know, dry.
Yeah.
Pretty much. So.
Right.
So at that point, you know, I want to feel better. So I'm going to go back. I know what, that's the thing about drugs is they work.
Right.
So that until we find a better solution, that's really the only one I knew.
Yeah.
And so I would, you know, I'd get 6 months clean or 8 months, and then I'd go back to it. Because I wasn't experiencing any peace or joy in my life.
Right.
Nothing had changed on the inside, right?
Right.
I'm just sober. I'm just not medicating all these feelings.
Yeah.
So now I'm feeling them even more so because I'm sober, and I haven't done anything healing-wise to deal with what these feelings are, where they come from.
Yeah.
How they're wrong.
You know, I mean, could there... Do you think during that time... I was thinking about this yesterday. Do you think, like... During that time, right, is it just you're just not ready? You're just not? Could there have been a magic pill or someone could have just said the right words to you? Or is it just a matter of just kind of like, you know, the timing of you finally hitting that point and going, okay, I'll do it. I'll do it is necessary.
Yeah. I don't know. I think God can really use anything. I think we put him in a box a lot.
Yeah.
And he's a lot bigger than a box, but
even
with the moment of being exposed and being aware of my brokenness, I still still wasn't quite enough, right?
So right.
I'm at this program for a long time, and it's really hard. I want to leave a bunch of times,
yeah,
but I don't want to go to prison, so I stay. but I'm not really, I'm submitting in a lot of ways, but I'm not really surrendered.
Ah, interesting. The difference between submitting and surrendering.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I was doing what was asked of me because it was asked of me and not because I wanted to.
Yeah. But in some ways, I guess that also, but that was, even though I guess there may be a period of time, right, of getting clean and getting sober where there is kind of a part of it where you just kind of, okay, just don't, just do what you're told for a minute, you know, until the miracle happens. So tell me, when does the miracle happen for you? When does the moment hit you and you go, and you do surrender, and you surrender to the whole thing, and you start to recover?
Yeah, so it took a long time. So I look at me submitting was really just fear of going backwards, like going back to how I felt and how I was living.
Yeah, yeah.
So I was really just doing stuff kind of to avoid that and to avoid, you know, prison. And then at a certain point, I started to develop a relationship with God that was like this real thing that was like super forgiving and full of grace and love, and it just felt palpable. And so I start to get like things like that would happen where I would have joy kind of added to my life, peace in my heart, like forgiveness for myself.
Yeah.
And so at a certain point I started to want more of that. And that's where like I'm like, all right, well, if I keep doing this stuff, all these things keep getting added to me.
Yeah.
And so that's where like surrender came in for me.
Yeah.
It was more looking to the future and wanting more of these things I'm getting from God through other people, and just it became less about fear of the past and more about being hopeful for the future. And I think that's where it switched for me. And what that looked like, I'd had these moments where I felt really connected with God. I was able to start being vulnerable and real with people, but I also was still in that submitting stage in this program at No Longer Bound. And they helped me out by kicking me out and saying, dude, you're just, you know, we don't think you're ready. And they were blunt about it. It was, you know, that tough love thing, and I'm really thankful for that. So they kicked me out, and they're like, hey, you can come back in 30 days, but we think you need some time to, like, assess if you really want this. And they were right, but, I was pissed in the moment, and I did what I would always do because I had this codependent relationship with my mom, and I called my mom. I was like, hey, you know, they're kicking me out, and I couldn't, like, take ownership that, like, hey, I'm kicking myself out by my actions, but I painted it like that to kind of get some sympathy, I think. So I was like, yeah, they're kicking me out. They said I can come back in 30 days, which I'm going to do. So I'm going to need to come home for 30 days, and then I'll come back. And she's like, well, we love you, but you can't come here.
Oh.
And I wasn't even mad at her in real time. Like, instantly, I was so proud of her.
Yeah.
Because, you know,
you were still sober at this point. You had some time of sobriety. You had done some work.
Yeah.
So you're not under the influence. You don't have those intense cravings. This is more, you're dealing more with your ego and yourself now at this point, right?
Yeah.
So when she says, nah, you can't come home, which you knew at that time, you're like, oh, that's good. You knew you needed that.
Yeah, and I think I felt like this chain was broken, this enabling chain, and I always have this safety net kind of thing to not take responsibility for my life. And so what that looked like was, all right, well, they love me. I can't come home. I believe both of those things. So what's my option? I don't have any money. I don't have a phone, a car, a job. I'm not from Atlanta. I'm from Jacksonville, Florida. It's like, all right, well, and then a homeless shelter was thrown up as a suggestion. So I went and spent like 6 weeks at the Atlanta Mission Homeless Shelter, and it was a great experience for me. I mean, it sucked, but that's why it was such a great experience, because I was like, man, this is where my decisions and actions have led me, and I know that it can get worse.
Yeah.
So I stayed sober the whole time, and, you know, drugs were everywhere. People were ODing, and, you know, there's fights going on and stuff, but I knew that it could get worse, and I did start to have some type of a foundation established before that with God, and I really leaned on Him big time.
Yeah, oh yeah.
And it was a cool experience for me. I really, you know, in places like that in the past, in jail, I would always kind of have this self-righteousness come up.
Yeah.
Where I'm like, I'm better than these people. I'm not like these people. But I'm definitely like these people. And, you know, but I would lie to myself and tell myself that to not really feel the weight of things.
Yeah.
But it was cool being there because on the surface, you know, it's a dark place, right?
Yeah.
And I look at these people and I'm like, man, I have way more in common with these people than I have differences.
Yeah.
We have hopes. We have fears. We want to be accepted. We want to be loved.
Yeah.
We've gone through some failures and there's a potential to bounce back. And I see that in these people. Instead of in the past, I would only see the differences. That's where my focus would be, to set myself apart. And so I think that was God trying to show me how to love people in that moment. And I had some really cool conversations. And
so you're in the mission. Were you doing you were just at the emergency shelter where you would stay overnight and then you had to check out? And
they had it where I was on a cot for like the first week, and I'm grateful for that because it was like 20 something degrees out.
Yeah.
And then you earn a bed and it's yours to lose. If you don't follow the rules, if you're not punctual, be back when you're supposed to be, you lose it. And they were at max capacity. So,
yeah. So this was wintertime.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. We used to do a thing there every Wednesday night, and we'd go there and speak and hang out with the guys. They used to do chapel service on Wednesdays. And I really enjoyed that. I always say that, like, it was technically the worst sounding worship ever, but it was the best, most authentic worship I'd ever experienced.
Yeah.
You know, there's just something about it, you know, when you get in there with those people in that state, right, of building their life back up, and there's a sense of humility, right, about it, mm-hmm. that and a dependency on God that, you know, I definitely had that in rehab, and I've had that in jail. You kind of, we all have those, you know.
Yeah.
And so to
sinks in a little bit.
Yeah, yeah. So I really I give regularly to the mission because I think the mission does great work, and it sounds like you benefited from that work, right? So after the mission, your stay at the mission, you go back up to NLB to get.
So I went back to No Longer Bound, and it's a year long program, and I started it back over at day one.
Oh man!
Which, you know, that humbled me, because all these guys that I had started the program with, they're now about to finish, and I'm
back, they're all
in orientation class.
Snap.
And
which is a testament to that program, right? That they, you know, they did what they needed to do.
Yeah,
to make sure you got what you needed.
I'm so thankful for
the
way that they love guys.
Yeah,
because it is not easy sometimes to love people in the way like that, like challenging people.
Yeah,
confrontationally.
Yeah,
but it's out of love. You know, the it's motivated by love. It may not look like it, because that's not how I knew love to look.
Mm-hmm.
It was always sunshine and rainbows.
Right.
But that's not, you know, that's not the truth. People care about you. They're going to call you on your crap.
And right.
It's probably going to hurt. It's going
to
sting.
Yeah. That's something I've been learning recently is, you know, to just be honest, you know, rigorous honesty.
Mm-hmm.
Because in the past, that's what I would not say certain things, because I'm like, I want this person to like me. I want them to come to me. I don't want to, you know, lose my ability to talk to them or minister to them. And all that's just my own ego wanting to be liked instead of just being real and honest and saying, you know, which is, that's how I need to be talked to. And someone, because if anybody is hints around the and doesn't get right to it, I will take their little hints and I'll figure out a way to not deal with my crap.
Yeah.
But when someone's straightforward and just says it, then it's like, oh, okay, cool. I know
what to do. No sugarcoating.
Right.
But they're saying it to help you and not to hurt you.
Exactly.
And I think when you have a relationship, you've had, you know, I don't think you could just do that with somebody you don't know. I don't think it, I mean, it's probably not going to turn out well. Right. But when it's somebody that you have a relationship with and you know they care about you,
yeah,
you're able to kind of like stuff down your ego enough to be like, this guy's saying this because he loves me, saying this to help me, not to hurt me.
Right.
But it could easily be, you know, misconstrued from somebody that you don't have that relationship with. You just get defensive and try to prove how they're wrong. Where if it's a friend and you try to prove how they're right in what they're saying, man, that's powerful.
Yeah, it's usually like when someone's telling you about you and you're getting mad.
Yeah.
It's a probably clear sign that maybe they're right.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. So you go back, you restart the program. So you are like, you know, you're like professor.
You should have seen me in orientation. I knew all the answers.
Right. So you go through it again. Now what, you know, at what point, when do you, you know, how do you get to this place where you're at today? When do you get out of there? Just kind of summarize for us kind of what brings you here today.
So leaving No Longer Bound, and I didn't even finish the program. Like towards the end of the program the second time, I just got really burnt out, and I was pretty vocal about that with my teacher there at the time, and I was starting to kind of hold my class up just because I was so tired of just being in a program, and it's like rigid structure in that place. And, you know, so he's like, well, maybe it's time for you to go. And I'm like, yeah, I think so, you know?
Yeah.
And so I met with him and the program director, and they're like, you know, so what are you thinking? I'm like, man, I'm thinking in the past, if you had told me this, I probably would have told you to go fuck yourself.
Right.
I was like, but right now, man, I got nothing but love for you guys, man. Like, y'all do a really hard job, but you do it so well.
Yeah.
There's so much love and prayer in all these considerations and decisions they make. And I was like, man, I'm just super grateful that I know you guys.
Mm-hmm.
And I just want, you know, I was just very thankful and just full of gratitude. And so there I am again. I'm leaving. No money, no phone, no car, no job. I don't really know many people. I know some guys that have graduated from the program that are no longer there. And so I called my buddy Dan. They let me call him. He was my roommate, and we worked together at the Bound, and he helped me get into Vision Warriors.
Yeah.
And they let me in with, you know, no money.
Yeah.
I all I had was what I could carry. And so I started there, and I prayed before I left No Longer Bound, and I journaled to God and heard pretty clearly from him. He's like, dude, as long as he's like, you know, this piece of paper is not what you came here for, this certificate of completion. He's like, it's not what you came here for. It's like, you came here to know me and to trust me. And he's like, if you, you know, as long as you follow me and put me first in your life, he's like, I got you.
Mm-hmm.
And I really like that resonated. Like, I truly, truly believe that.
Yeah.
And so that's what I started doing. I put, you know, a lot of prayer into any decisions I made. I brought other people into it. I had a wise counsel of people. I really just decided to not trust myself completely on decisions.
Yeah, right.
Brought people into that
mm-hmm.
that aren't going to tell me what I want to hear. You know? Because they love me.
Right. Right.
And so that led to getting a job with a good Christian guy,
mm-hmm.
doing that to the best of my ability each day. And I know I was talking to you earlier about reaping and sowing.
Yeah.
Where I judge my days now on good seeds planted versus the harvest. And that is a 180 from how I've ever lived in the past.
Yeah.
And I feel like that's like a testament to just leaning on God a lot. And he's like, dude, just keep doing, you know, the right stuff, what I put in your heart to do. And that's the biggest change. If I had to sum it up, I spent, you know, we all have a conscience. And I believe that that's God in us, mm-hmm. right? Because God is in us. We know right from wrong. But I got really good at muting that voice in the past.
Yeah.
You know, if you want an example, pointing a gun at somebody and telling them to give me their stuff. And that's, you know, and there's tons of examples like that. To now, like, I just feel very in tune to that voice.
Yeah.
And I have enough, I've trusted it enough times on big decisions, you know, in the last few years, and God has just kind of shown off and shown me, like, just really rewarded that faith and that trust. So it makes it really easy to continue to do that. And I'm in tune with hearing that voice, like, man, this voice is not telling me what I want to hear. This isn't what I want to do, but yeah. I trust God, and I'm going to do it.
Yeah.
And it's just becoming easier and easier to continue to do that in my life. I just have more peace and joy in my life because, you know, I'm not trying to draw happiness from every harvest, which it's nice when it happens.
Right.
But I get a lot of peace, you know, sustained, consistent peace from sowing good seeds.
Yeah.
So yeah. I feel like that makes God proud, makes me proud of myself.
Mm-hmm.
And then also it makes people I care about proud of me. And I think that's the correct order for that to flow in. God, then myself, then other people.
Yeah. Yeah, and you're also enjoying the ride, right? You're absolutely enjoying the process, which is what the sowing is, right? Is the
journey.
The journey, right? It's the actual process of doing those things and to be able to find beauty and joy and fulfillment in those things, you know, and that's just good spiritual living, you know. And I think yeah. for me, I can, whenever I am find myself discontent or irritable or any of those things, it's usually because I've lost sight of that, and I maybe focusing too much on the payoff, on the end result of something.
Yeah,
and so it's really good to. So there's some things, right? Community, willingness, submitting until you find a time to surrender.
Yeah, and that's weird, you know? That's different for everybody.
Right.
It's hard to tell somebody what that is for them.
Yeah, and then there's a continual conscious contact with God, a continual conscious, authentic contact and relationship with other men in your life. And so these are the variables, man. And when somebody has these variables, in whatever way they get these variables, then their opportunity and their chance for long-lasting recovery is great.
Yeah.
And so, you know, just thankful that you're here to share your story. I'm thankful you're willing to do that. And I'd love to have you, you know, I'd love to do this again with you. I mean, we can dive into some specific topics, you know, and give you a creative outlet to kind of spread what you're doing to more people.
Yeah, I'd love to.
Yeah. So thanks, man. Thanks for being here. Thank you for listening. If you got this far in the show, congratulations. email me, contact@themosthighshow.com, contact@themosthighshow.com, and we'll send you a box of ding-dongs. Yeah.
Twinkies.
And such of the kind, of the like. All right, man. This is Christian, Adam. This is the Most Side Show.
Peace. Thanks, guys.